In 1938, C.S. Lewis published Out of the Silent Planet, the first of his space trilogy. A copy of this slim volume, bound in bluish-gray cloth, was purchased and transported to the library for the British community in Zanzibar. Zanzibar is located off the coast of Tanzania in East Africa, and probably the most internationally famous person to be born in Zanzibar is Freddie Mercury, of Queen. Each family who borrowed the book signed the inside cover before returning it to the next family to share. During World War II, with much more limited communication than we currently take for granted, the looming specter of advancing war must have been terrifying. A few hours of escape reading to explore a new planet in outer space, far from the real potential of disaster on Earth, would be, for me at least, a necessary luxury. At some point, the book was transported off the island, and 60 years later, I found it sitting on a bottom dusty shelf in a used bookstore in Wilmington that I frequented. I bought it not so much for the collectible value of a British first edition of C.S. Lewis, but more because I was irresistibly drawn to the names inside the cover and the journey the book must have taken from London to Zanzibar to Tanzania, and then how did it come to Wilmington? I was holding in my hands not just a historic artifact of British colonialism, but also a collection of ideas that had called to someone during the looming terror of a world war. Could it call to me the same way? Or by virtue of geography and time, would I read an entirely different book contained within the same covers? 6 years later, I found myself in Malawi, East Africa, with Jock, working on a water pump and peanut sheller project. For several days, we were far from the capital city of Lilongwe and stayed at a pottery that rented out small huts on the shores of Lake Malawi. At the end of a day's drive on an expanse of dirt filled with holes and obstacles that no Roman would consider a road, we checked in at the main building, which also housed the market for the pottery. Apparently, none of the huts had keys or locks, but the concierge mumbled something that sounded like puff and held up four fingers and gestured to the right. We walked in the advised direction, and at the fourth hut, the real surprise was the sign on the door. Hufflepuff. It must be a local name for a bird, Jock commented. No, sweetheart, I shook my head. Look, there's Slytherin, Gryffindor, and Ravenclaw, I pointed at the signs on the other huts. And he looked at me with blank confusion. Harry Potter, I translated. They have four huts, or houses, and they are named for the four houses in Harry Potter. Jock missed Harry Potter in its entirety. His children were grown and out of the house by the time the craze hit. And on the day we arrived in Malawi, the newspaper in the capital city carried a story about a woman who was stoned and had her house burned down for practicing witchcraft against her neighbor. And it was not reported with shock that such a thing should happen in the 21st century, but with an air that at least justice and retribution had been sought. How amazing, I mused, that in this land where magic walks and witchcraft is reported in the daily newspaper, that stories about young witches and wizards growing up in a magical boarding school is what captures people's imagination. But even more beautiful is the thought that these stories continue to travel and carry their magic between people in the most unexpected times and places, maybe when they need to escape the most.